This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
Welcome. This is A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast show with Andrea and Alice. Our community is made up of so many amazing and diverse groups of people, as are the programs on Joy 94.9. There is something there for everyone. A Little Pot of Joy is where we highlight just some of these amazing programs.
We would like to show our respect and acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, of elders past and present of the Kulin Nation, whose land we are broadcasting from.
We're opening the evening with a podcast from Rise Up. Let's Hakuna Our Matata with John X.
Rejoining the cast of the Lion King musical as Pumbaa, Tasmanian actor, performer and radio jock John X joins the cast live in studio to chat about reclaiming his role after 10 years as the beloved flatulent warthog and life in the Lion King.
If you're not able to listen to the show live, the podcasts are available for download from the Joy website, joy.org.au/riseup.
This is A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
See, now I'm familiar with that, but Dee, you wouldn't be familiar with that, and Michelle would be familiar with this.
It's sound. Soaked into my psyche. Like when the strains of that came out, I was like, oh, I know this, but I haven't physically seen with my own eyes the joy that is the Lion King.
And down goes her microphone. Yeah. Joining us in studio as a cast member of the hit musical The Lion King, which is in Melbourne playing right now, John X, who plays Bumba, joins us. Good morning, John.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
This is a bit early for you, isn't it? Because normally you're matinee and late nighttime performer.
When you're working, normally it's like a 10 o'clock get up out of bed thing, but I've flown in from Tassie this morning, so I got up at some stupid hour.
Are you playing in Tassie?
To catch a 10. No, are we playing in Tassie?
Yeah.
No. In fact, last night I was broadcasting in Tassie on ABC Radio. Can I say ABC Radio and Joy FM?
Sure. It can't be a commercial conflict.
I'm pretty sure I can't say Joy FM on ABC Radio.
As long as you say Joy 94.9, then we'll
Joy 94.9.
Yes, then we'll forgive you.
Oh, okay, fine. Cool. Did you see, can I interrupt? Obama played this. Did you see that speech? He made some speech in. And Trump was in the audience, and he said, they've finally found my birth video.
I believe that was the...
And just play that whole bit that you started the show.
That was the correspondence dinner, the media correspondence dinner, which was hilarious.
Very funny.
Well, welcome to Joy. You're not a stranger of Joy.
No, I think I was here 10 years ago when I last did Pumbaa in Melbourne. And the last time you didn't see it.
I also didn't see it then, so...
Great, you've missed lots of it, haven't
you? Do you know
what?
I'm going to see it this time, I bloody am.
Are you really?
Yep. I got lots of nieces and nephews and they'll all be coming with me.
Oh, they'll love it.
Yeah. Kids should see more theatre and musical theatre. I think it's great.
I think they do know that nowadays, though. They do, don't they? They see heaps. They see tons.
Oh,
and this, the good thing about this show is, you know, like here I am 10 years later doing the same role again, is there's a whole generation since last time we did it who hadn't seen it but who are busting a gut to try and set, and it appeals to like a massive cross-section of the community, which is why it's so popular.
Mm. It's a massive franchise, isn't it? I mean, this is a big show,
but it global. Is. People don't know what to expect when they come and see it. Mm. I mean, and that first opening 7 minutes that Adam played there, that's the start of the show. Like, some people have told me that, you know, that's their, you know, $100 right there.
It is an amazing
people
song.
Cry. I've seen people cry.
Just the costumes and just the way it looks. Like, I remember seeing it for the first time. I was in Sydney when I saw it. The first time it came in, I was like, whoa. Like, I felt like a kid again watching it. Like,
yeah. You know, so. And it's completely like, it's not the cartoon on stage, for example. You know, like when you go and I think you see Disney on Ice, they pretty much have big soft costumes versions of the cartoon characters. This is like redesigned and it looks...
So your character is a...
He's a flatulent warthog.
Oh, see. I was going for meerkat, but...
No, meerkat's the... That's Timon.
Yeah, see? See, maybe I'm pretending to know nothing.
We're a duo.
So that you see I'm drawing it out. Little interviewing technique.
You're very good.
Yeah, right?
And you're probably like associate producer on the show.
Yeah. That's right.
Just keeping it quiet.
We're just making sure how...
Yeah,
how
no, flatulent warthog.
How does the flatulence manifest itself?
I think warthogs are renowned for having flatulence, as we all are, but warthogs...
Is there a fart contraption in your outfit?
No.
So it's all real?
Yeah, pretty much. That's how you get the role.
Can you please fart on audition? It's like, you know, when they ask actors and actresses to cry on command.
Right, yeah.
John, can you fart on command?
I wish I could. There are people that can, though. You do know that, don't you?
I bet there are.
There are people that make amazing
careers.
I'm
related to six of them.
Wow. Well, I can do, like, tunes and stuff. I can do, like, show tunes. And
so if you're like me and you've got 17-year-old nephews who are very, very cool and they think they might be too cool for Lion King, is not true.
No, it's not true. No, it's not true. I mean, it's hard to explain. And the good thing about coming back into it like I did is I got to sort of watch it again, and you forget what an extraordinary production it is to watch. And this stuff appeals to all sorts of people. I mean, like, there are some very good-looking people in this show, not me, with amazing bodies. If you were just going to come for a perv, The Lion King's fantastic. Like, these.
We're going to poke you with a stick because I'm sure there's people listening that are going, "Oh, I wonder if you can do a couple of lines from The Lion King."
Well, I can't do anyone else's. Like, I can do Simba's lines or Mufasa's lines. You want some Pumba lines?
Yeah,
there must be. What are the most annoying? Like, do you get annoyed by that, or do you just love it because people are so engaged?
People always say, and if you go and talk at schools, they go, "Can you sing Hakuna Matata?"
Yeah,
and I sort of say, "No, not really, because it's a duo." Yeah. And I don't have Timon with me.
I'll do the low bit. Ready?
The low bit.
Is there a low bit?
No, I got the low bit.
Oh, okay. Oh, no, I probably should have guessed that.
Timon does the high bit. Yeah, okay. Timon does the high bit. But yeah, they usually give it a sing. They love hearing the voice, and they burst into spontaneous applause. It's the weirdest thing.
Do it.
Well, can you do the "when he was a young warthog" line? When I was a young warthog, sorry.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's different. I've got to actually sing up quite high. It's a bit early, but I'll give it a go. So Timon goes, what does Timon say? He says, I say, Hakuna Matata, these two words will solve all your problems. And he goes, "That's right, take Pumbaa here. Why, when he was a young warthog." And I sing, "When I was a young warthog." Timon goes, "Very nice." And I go, "Thanks." But that's the highest I go in the show. The rest is all gravelly stuff. And it takes about a week to get into it.
Yeah.
But then your throat's happy there for a while.
That's pretty good, though. I reckon that deserves an artificial round of applause.
That's nice. It's a small appreciative crowd.
the kid in me just went, "Oh, that's so awesome."
Yeah, Michelle's got all gushy over there.
Hey, I got two children under 10, so we watch this as well. Wow. So
Have you seen the show?
I haven't taken them yet. I mean, $100 a person's kind of hard for a single parent.
Yeah, true.
But I'd love to take them.
Yeah, that's
tell you
great.
What though, it's well worth it though.
But is the matinee more cost effective? Is there or do you know what?
I don't know.
You're not that end of the business.
No, I haven't. I have bought tickets, but no, I think so. It might be. Like, it depends where you sit in the theatre as well.
You you have to buy tickets as well. "Hi, I'm playing Pumbaa." That's $100 every night.
Remember, you know, this is a professional gig. We all get paid, so they don't give you free tickets. No. You've got to pay for them if you want your family to come.
But still, that's awesome. John, thank you so much for coming in this morning and having a chat.
Thanks for having us.
We have to make note, 4 weeks left, and then Lion King leaves Melbourne.
November 1. It closes in Melbourne.
And then it shoots off to Perth?
Yeah, Perth from the middle of November, about the 18th, I think we preview.
Do we drag that whole set over there? Like, there's one set and it travels?
Yeah, they do. Wow. Like, there's a crew work, like, through the night, flat out.
And they do, like, a safari. Everyone gets locked in cages in a road transport.
Right. Driven across the Nullarbor.
27 Maasai warriors.
Put back up again. Yeah, it's a big thing. There are, like, massive, hundreds of people involved in putting the show on.
Yeah.
You know, you see 50-odd people on stage, but...
So it's the first ever Perth season, first time that Lion King is coming to Perth at the Crown Theatre from November 18. So you've got between now, the 7th of October, and the 1st of November to go check out The Lion King here in Melbourne. Go to lionking.com.au or any Ticketmaster agency or on the website. Buy your tickets, get down there and see it. It's an amazing performance.
That's right, 8 shows a week.
You're on Joy 94.9. This is A Little Pot of Joy with Andrea and Alice. Up next from Transpositions, Boys Night In.
Ruben joins Kurt and Nate to tell his unique transition story. The boys expose FTM toilet secrets, yikes. That's right, things you never knew, you wished you never knew.
You can listen to the entire podcast by downloading it from the Joy website, joy.org.au/transpositions, or download it from the iTunes store.
You're listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
Ah.
I'm Kurt, and I'm your host for this evening, and I'm joined by Ruben and Nate, two FTM Melbourne boys. So I want to touch a little bit on STPs, which are stand to pees, and male bathroom etiquette, which is it's a big topic, and it's going to be an interesting one, and I'm looking forward to it because Ruben and Nate certainly sound like they've got some interesting things to say. It also leads us onto bathroom etiquette as well, which is certainly something that has changed, I guess, for all trans people when they start using the opposite bathroom. It's tough in early transition when you don't know which bathroom to use. Did you guys ever sort of... Were you ever out in public and really need to go to the bathroom and then go, oh, I can't go because there's no disabled toilet? Or
yeah. Well, for me, prior to transition, you know, I had all sorts of things. Like when I was in Bangkok once, I had security come in and pull me out of the women's toilets because I thought I was in the wrong toilets because I was quite androgynous then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and certainly going to the women's bathrooms was always an ordeal,
mm-hmm.
especially if you have a day where you're feeling a bit vulnerable and you just want to blend in. But going to the toilet was like this massive drama, like people when you're walking in staring, when you're coming out of the stall staring, people questioning you're allowed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So for many years I just went to the disabled toilets,
mm-hmm.
Occasionally nicked into the guys' toilets if there was no one bothered waiting, or yeah,
yeah.
But as soon as I started transition, I just started using the guys' toilets, and it took a little while for me to adjust in my mind that because mm-hmm. no one was even noticing. Like I'd walk in, people would take no notice, but there would be this whole, oh my god, they're going to notice. I shouldn't be in here,
mm-hmm.
and you know, or someone's going to notice I'm a little bit different, or
yeah.
you know. But as I've masculinized more. I don't even really think about it anymore.
Mm.
Yeah, just sort of go in and do what I need to do, but it's certainly a different etiquette.
Mm.
People don't look at each other. There's no eye contact.
Yeah.
Yeah,
certainly.
Head down, get to it and get out.
That's it, yeah. Certainly in the female toilet, it's sort of a little retreat, a social retreat to discuss what's been going on at the dinner table or whatever, but the male toilet is business, strictly business. Don't look at anyone, don't talk to anyone, which can be beneficial in early transition, I guess, because people aren't scrutinising you and, you can get away with just ducking in and out. Before the show started, we were all sitting around talking about urinals and we had Chris is on the panel tonight, everybody, and Chris did pipe in. Because Nate, you've never used a urinal before?
No.
No?
No.
It is possible. For listeners who were thinking, how the hell do trans boys use urinals, there are things called STPs, which are stand-to-pee devices. They come in all sorts of different shapes and sizes and materials. They're sort of an attachment to your pee hole, I guess. it allows you to aim where you need to aim to.
Mm. Better than most cis guys, I think, with less practice.
I would agree with that.
From what I can see, anyway.
Yeah, that was one of the things that that shocked me in male bathrooms. I was like, how do they not get it in the toilet? STPs. Now, Nate, you left a little comment on our Facebook page saying that you had trouble with an STP that you bought.
Yeah, so initially I went and looked at all these things and I was like, because there's sort of varying range of prices and there's all different types of stuff. So I thought, oh, look, I'll just do something really basic. And I'd heard that if you had a medicine spoon, if you sort of cut the end off, then that sort of works. And I thought, oh, I'll try that. So it's this sort of tiny little spoon. And I was thinking, oh, you know, that kind of...
discreet?
Discreet. So it's good. Fits into your pocket because you kind of don't want to be sort of in a rush. But I suppose if you're ever going to use a device, I would strongly recommend practicing at home in the shower before you practiced wearing clothing and
wearing your good jeans.
Yeah. Trying to aim in a tiny little funnel that, you know, it got a little bit messy. That's all.
Sounds a bit traumatic. So anyone listening out there, unless you have really good aim or know exactly how your flow is going to come out, then maybe not use a medicine spoon. But
Or practice a lot.
Or practice a lot in the shower, as Nate said. Now, Ruben, do you use STPs?
Recently, relatively new kid on the block when it comes to STPs. One thing that we were talking about on the break was the psychology of peeing.
Yep.
Standing up. Probably until about a month ago, I just thought, why would you bother?
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's a primal urge or another part of my exploration as a trans guy, but I've certainly been experimenting with that in the last few weeks. And so I started off with a pee style, but I haven't had one accident with it, which is great, but it's quite big, so it's sort of hard to carry around in your pocket without looking like you've got, you know,
a weapon.
Well, yeah, that's one way of describing it.
What does it look like? Can you describe
what it looks like? I was about to get it out of my pocket. Oh. No one can see it on the radio. It's almost like the shape of a bird beak. So it's wider at the part where you obviously put it in your junk or your mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And then it sort of narrows down as where the urine comes out. So it's more of a, well, I haven't really paid that close attention to cis guys urinating, but I imagine the flow's pretty similar. But I have no problems with that. It's just literally carrying it around, which is
it's a pain. Yeah. Mm. I suppose it's a pain if you want to be in your board shorts in summer or something like that. Where do you put it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you were saying that you find it, you're sort of starting to connect with that appeal of peeing standing up. and Nate, do you feel that way as well? You were saying that you can't be bothered.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm in my lazy phase, I suppose. Like, yep. I think initially, about 6 months ago, I was like, yeah, I need to stand up. And that's, you know, that's what guys do. They go to the toilet, they stand up.
Yeah.
And then I was just kind of like, well, there's always like a cubicle and a seat. So why not sit down? So I got lazy.
Mm. I remember the first time I was going to men's bathrooms and I actually had to ask someone, can cis men pee sitting down? Because I didn't know if they could. And so I didn't want to be caught sitting down and peeing. Like, you know, you can tell if someone's peeing because you can hear the pee noise and this is really getting put on, but I didn't want to be caught sitting down peeing and someone to go, hang on, dudes can't do that, but they can do that. They can. So why do guys stand up and go through that whole urinal etiquette when they can just have a cubicle to themselves?
I don't know, like I think the psychology of it for me is having like the full, and I know it's, we're just talking about urinating, but there's something, I don't know, ritualistic or something to be a guy and to stand up. And because I haven't had that experience, I'm experimenting with that, and sometimes I'll probably be like Nate and go, I can't be bothered, or the pee style is just too big, so, you know, I'm just going to freestyle and sit down today. But yeah, I think it's something about the psychology of standing up, and I don't know. It's hard to explain, because until a few weeks ago, I was like, "Why would you bother?" Like, I don't get it. But yeah, it's just experimenting and working out what's right for you, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Well, before I said, even with canines, they like to pee on things and mark their territory, and it's a sign of dominance, and it might be something similar with humans.
Possibly.
If
I start urinating on trees everywhere, you know there's a problem.
Yeah.
You're on Joy 94.9 and this is A Little Pot of Joy with Andrea and Alice. Up next from Is Nothing Sacred, A Dirty Second Birthday.
104 shows. That's 2 years on air and still going. Is Nothing Sacred is celebrating their second birthday with a dirty interview that's not quite what you'd expect.
This week, James, Jim, Claire and Steph are joined by former co-host Pat for this momentous occasion, starting with an interview with Jen Wiltshire about phytoremediation and the universe of dirt.
If you can't listen to the show live, download the podcast from the Joy website, joy.org.au/isnothingsacred or the iTunes Store.
This is A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
Tonight is a very, very special show.
It sure is.
You might have guessed if you've been listening for a long time, or if you just tuned in, you'll have no idea what we're talking about, because tonight is our 2-year anniversary of Is Nothing Sacred. We have been on every Monday night, 10 to 11, for 2 years, no breaks.
Wow.
Commitment.
Oh, that shows you how fabulous we are. And I'm looking around the studio and we are fabulous. Fabulosity has increased too, because we've invited one of our original co-hosts, Patrick, to
come back into
the studio to join us tonight. And we've let Claire stay in here, even though she hasn't done the whole 2 years. She hasn't done the whole 2 years. We're just going to beat her into submission so that she does.
Thanks so much, Jim.
Yes, so a bit of reminiscing, but first up, we're going to be talking to two researchers tonight. And first up, we have Jen. Hi.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Welcome to Is Nothing Sacred. Now, I'm quite excited to talk to you because I think you, like me, are a fellow biologist of some description.
Yes.
If I understand correctly, your interest is in dirt.
I like dirt. Absolutely.
What do you like about dirt?
What don't I like about dirt? So I study soil microbial ecology. So when
did
I
did your mother
at
have to keep telling you not to put dirt in your mouth when you were a child?
She never stopped telling me. There's every picture of me as a little kid is with dirt on my face. So it's soil microbial communities is what I study. So when I look at dirt, I don't just see dirt. I see a whole universe of communities and interactions. And, you know, in 1 gram of dirt, there's something like, I don't know, between 1,000 and 10,000 different species of microorganisms. So my job or my research is to study them all at once and try and work out what they're doing. And
do they have nuclear wars?
They have biological warfare, which is very cool. They do that in the roots of plants to try and muscle each other out for space.
So what are these organisms that we're talking about? Are they bacteria? Are they little bugs?
Yeah. So when we talk about, I guess, microorganisms, that's anything that you
tell
can't see.
Tell us the strangest ones.
Oh, the strangest ones. Well, so when I talk about microorganisms, I mean usually bacteria and fungi. There are all sorts of strange and wonderful ones. In our lab, we work with a beautiful one called Geobacter metalli reducens, and it's beautiful because it breathes electricity.
What?
So we can put it in a microbial fuel cell, and it will put electrons onto anodes and cathodes, and we can turn it basically into a living battery. Very, very cool little bug.
Why?
Does it light up?
Yeah, it will. The bug itself, no, it doesn't light up, but it will. We can make it power LEDs.
So why aren't we all running our houses on bacteria dirt?
It's very, very
because they're going to mutate and take us over.
No, they're not going to mutate on us. I don't think it's more the fact that unless in your house all you need is a little blinking LED. It's probably not quite enough electricity for you. Maybe, not yet, anyway.
Maybe we just don't have enough bacteria.
That could be it, too. That could be it.
So you said there are lots of species that live in the soil.
Sure, yeah.
How do they interact? What are some of the things that happen in these wars?
Well, okay, so, well, the wars are always exciting to talk about. So that's kind of where where our antibiotics come from. So in the soil, microbes use antibiotics to basically muscle out other species of bacteria when they're competing for space. Now, the space that they tend to be competing for is space in the rhizosphere, which is the root zone. So I work a lot with plant microbe interactions, so that's kind of the front line of these microbial community wars. The reason they really want to be on those roots is because the plants are constantly pumping what we call root exudates, so that's carbon, nitrogen, basically sort of a buffet of food for the bacteria. So everyone wants to be there, but it's pretty expensive real estate.
And what are some of the applications of this kind of work?
So in terms of the soil stuff, which is what really interests me, so I'm really interested in trying to work out, can we get, we know that in the soil there are microbes that promote plant growth. Can we get any soil to sort of promote plant growth for us? We know these plant growth promoting microbes are everywhere. How do we kind of switch them on? So the applications of this are manifold. You can imagine, you know,
you mean turn the deserts into oases?
That might be a little bit extreme, but it would be really nice to be able to go around Australia and say, okay, let's look at this soil. How do we get the maximum productivity out of this soil and maybe reduce sort of maybe some of our fertiliser input?
Barnaby Joyce is going to love you.
That's good. So the other application I'm interested in, which you guys were talking to me about before, was phytoremediation. So this is, you know, when we have soil that has contaminants in it, so something like heavy metals, which are really hard to move. Now, we know there are trees out there that can not only withstand these heavy metal toxins, but they've evolved to actually actively suck the metals up out of the soil and store them in their leaves. So it's a pretty inefficient process, but we do know if we put microbes with these plants that promote the plant growth, the whole phytoremediation process gets sped up. So part of my research is trying to work out, can we get phytoremediation to a sort of efficient enough level where people will start actually using it? Because it's pretty slow at the moment, but it's still very cool.
So what happens to the leaves? I guess they get scattered and it's not so intense?
The idea is you can... Yeah, they've looked at that. So if you get the wrong plant, it will just drop its leaves and then the heavy metal goes back into the soil. But if you get the right plant, you can actually sort of harvest it and then remove the metals from the environment that way. And, you know, there's some talk of even, you know, if you remove this, you know, the plant material with the metals, some of these metals are really quite precious metals. Could you extract the metal back from the plant material and recycle it that way? They call that one phytomining.
Like gold or something from an apple, or
gold would be ideal, but
well,
all sorts of things.
We do get gold out of our sewage system.
Mm. Oh yeah, people's rings that they've dropped.
No, the gold that we eat. It's in some foods and things.
Oh
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
Just goes through us and comes out.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's so inert.
Yeah, and they collect it because it's pure.
How do you collect it?
Well, I don't know. Go and ask. We'll have to ask Melbourne Water. We'll have to get them in and ask them. But they do actually have a chemical method of of breaking it down, just leaving the gold, because the gold doesn't break down.
Sure, exactly.
It just stays there. So, you know, once it's gone through the filters, it just there is gold sitting there. So they just collect it all up and sell it.
Mm, nice.
So you might have a gold tooth that comes from the Werribee.
That's an Werribee awesome thought.
Waterways.
So is soil something that you've studied throughout your whole career, or were you off on another track and thought, this is wrong, it should be dirt?
Okay, so I guess many, many moons ago I actually did an art degree and then I came back to science. So the short answer is no, it's not been my life's work. But all through my undergraduate career and leading up to this point, everything I've done has been about plant microbe interactions. So that's, you know, pretty close to dirt. If a plant and a microbe are interacting, it's usually in dirt.
Do you garden? Do you garden?
I love gardening, yes. What? You look at me like you don't believe me. I love gardening.
I can't believe anybody likes gardening.
Jim, you need to be more open-minded just because you don't like gardening.
Well, if I don't like it, that's a pretty good benchmark as far as I'm concerned.
That is quintessential, Jim. I love it. Jen, I've got a little bit of a question, a little bit left field, but hopefully still topical.
Okay,
to dirt
and
bacteria. So obviously there was a bit of excitement with the NASA announcement on Mars recently.
Sure, yeah.
Do you remember the conversation that the scientists were mentioning that often when, you know, people jumped the gun and was like, could it be life? There was a conversation about, well, you know, one of the most interesting things is that we could actually bring a bit of dirt to Mars, and then we could have actually brought a little bacteria or life there by mistake, because they're pretty tough critters, some of them.
They sure are. There are bacteria that have been shown to survive in the vacuum of space. So I think NASA are actually pretty careful about cleaning down like entire spaceships before they get them to leave.
And I was reading about the announcement. They won't let the Mars rover go around the surface of Mars at the moment because of the water, the flowing water. They've got it parked and it's not allowed to move in case it drops a bacteria off into the flowing water.
So no dirt on their boots then? No space dirt? No earth dirt?
No earth dirt,
but
no
there
space
might be some
dirt.
Space dirt here. Can you identify space microbes? Things that have been deposited by...
Oh, from an asteroid.
Something that's come from an asteroid. Without actually sort of just, I guess, getting an asteroid out of the asteroid belt and looking at the microbes on it. No, not. There's no sort of telltale signs about which microbes are alien life.
But you can tell, you know where meteors hit the Earth, and so you can find the meteoric rock. And
oh, for
like
sure.
That.
But I guess the question is, I mean...
Is there anything still left inside that is the remnants of
it would be very hard to discern which micro...
There's a challenge. You can come on next time and tell us.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess it would be very hard to discern, like, if what you find in or on that rock was picked up coming through the atmosphere.
I'm sure they had a program on the X-Files about that.
Probably. I'm sure it killed everybody.
I just was so impressed at how tough some of the organisms, microorganisms, can be.
Oh, my God,
yeah. No. In my mind.
Have they let you into the Ranger Uranium Pit water pits in Kakadu yet to see what organisms are living in those radioactive pits?
No, they have not, but maybe one day they will. So my boss used to work with uranium remediation using my little buddy Geobacter that I was telling you about before. So it doesn't just produce electricity, it can transform uranium that's in the water table and so that it drops out solid and they can collect it and clean up the soil that way. So maybe one day they'll pay us money to go up there and have a look, but not yet. No one's approached us yet.
That's a pretty impressive trait for a little bacteria.
Oh, sure.
So does that mean it can be used in, like, cleaning up nuclear sites, or is that kind of beyond its capabilities?
Maybe. Just maybe.
You're listening to Joy 94.9, and this is A Little Pot of Joy with Alice and Andrea. Up next from Triple Threat, toilet etiquette.
On this episode, hear James's discovery of some new toilet etiquette that took him by surprise.
And you can listen to the entire podcast by downloading it from the Joy website, joy.org.au/triple threat, or download it for free from the iTunes store.
You're listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
We talk toilet etiquette because...
Ew.
Yeah, someone told me recently that people do things at urinals that I thought they shouldn't do. And so I asked if it's a thing.
I tell ya, I don't like those urinals.
What, tricks? Hey guys, check this out.
Wow.
You can do urinal tricks?
No, you can't.
How do you use those things, guys?
I'm asking...
Can you get a moment is what you're asking, James.
You know what? That's exactly what I'm asking. I need to know if this is a thing. Now, let me give you a backstory.
Yes. Yep.
I was chatting to someone. We're talking bathroom etiquette. And what do you do in the men's room?
Okay, I'm out.
Ladies' room. Because I'd be intrigued to know if there's a similar sort of...
There are no urinals in a ladies' room. Have you ever been in one?
Well, I'm damned if I do, damned if I don't, James.
Now, I was chatting to a guy the other day. And he was looking forward to going to a certain pub or bar or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really looking forward to looking sideways.
He was looking forward to looking sideways.
Looking forward to looking sideways.
Pre-planning,
mm-hmm.
checking out pre-planning.
Yeah.
That's
that's great. It's very pre-planning, clever. Yeah, I like that.
I didn't think it was a thing.
They're things and they're people's own things.
Yep.
Keep your eyes on your own thing.
Like, look, admittedly, if it's 4 a.m. or something, I might take a swipe to look.
But it's 4 a.m.
My head doesn't move. It's a very James, important skill to have.
It's not an app. You're not allowed to swipe it.
But... Like during a normal hour of the day? No, do not. Just keep your eyes to the front. Especially, no wonder people
hours.
Have,
yes.
what are the, like, stage fright.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought that was a big no-no. My limited understanding of men's urinals suggests that you just look straight ahead, you do your thing, and you get out.
Oh, look, in the urinals, especially if you're at a sporting event or something, generally, or at a bar watching games, I mean, there's generally a bit of banter, a bit of joking.
I've got
no problem with banter, but you keep the eye line, you never look, never below the neck. You don't, because even if you're like, oh, nice shirt, it looks like your eyes could be going lower.
Well, and then you're not saying nice underwear.
Well, you're not. You're hitting dangerous territory as soon as you deviate from... the common like, reason why you're there.
I'm quite often will have a conversation in the bathroom.
Ah, no issues.
I can do two things at once.
But you are a multitasker.
Thank you. Is it a thing to look? And look, I think this is just a gay thing, to be honest. Like, I don't think guys, you know what? I was going to say guys at footy clubs probably don't do this, but I've heard some other stories.
James,
so,
people in football rooms, people just walk around butt naked. Yeah. There's show offs.
How do you deal with these things? I have
if you've got
no
it,
idea.
It.
Like, it's just so different. Mm. Like, if girls had urinals, I would not be taking a peek. I'd not be just walking around.
I'd be impressed, by the way, if you guys had urinals. Like, well done standing. Good stuff. You clap.
We're talking bathroom etiquette because I've been recently told that people are looking. I didn't know it was a thing. I just thought it was rude. But it turns out it's a thing that people are doing.
They're just having a little looky-looky.
Little cheeky peek. Now, if you're a little bit bashful, there's always an opportunity for a new product in the market when things like this arise, James.
Oh, entrepreneurial Jess.
What about little pop-up curtains? So, like when you open your flight, little pop-up curtains out the side and over the top just give you your own little private viewing room.
Okay, so like portable curtains.
Yeah, portable curtains, but they're spring-loaded. So when you undo your zipper, pop out, bang.
Okay.
Immediate side protection. I mean, you can come in all different sizes and lengths as well. So if, you know.
Different materials, different colours.
A bit of red satin would go lovely, I think.
I think that there's definitely a market in that for women.
Oh.
A bit of privacy.
Isn't it just called a cubicle?
Yeah,
but how hard is it to find a cubicle sometimes?
Oh, you're talking a pop-up cubicle.
Yeah.
Or a poop-up cubicle.
Oh, so you mean just like bringing it to urinals.
Mm.
Following. Yeah, for shiz. Maybe.
Or for whiz.
You're up there with the dad jokes today.
Getting around them.
I could not think of anything worse than going to the bathroom with someone next to me. In open space.
Actually, we do have a gender-neutral toilet here that is shared by everybody at Joy. And Christina can't go in the same cubicle next to me, James.
No.
She has to wait until I leave.
Mm.
Stage fright?
It's two reasons.
You don't want to hear his noises.
Stage fright, and with Jess, you just don't know what you're going to get.
Look, guys, if you have a coffee in the morning...
Oh, okay, no. Stop. Too much.
What did you say?
Too much.
Guys.
Too much.
Well, fine, have a peek and check what's going on, Christina.
You're listening to Joy 94.9, and this is Little Pot of Joy with Andrea and Alice. Up next, from Joy's interview highlights, continuing the theme, toilets, personal or political?
Lana Wolfe explores whether there is a bathroom debate in Australia by talking to the Australian Human Rights Commissioner, Tim Wilson.
In 2013, a Queensland parent of a transgender child threatened to introduce an anti-discrimination lawsuit against the Education Department in Queensland, which forced schools to introduce unisex bathrooms.
And if you just can't listen to the show live, download the podcast from the Joy website, joy.org.au/joyinterviewhighlights, or the iTunes Store.
This is A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
In 2013, a threatened anti-discrimination lawsuit by a parent of a transgender child opened the door to Queensland schools introducing unisex toilets, change rooms and sports teams. In 2014, Swinburne became the first university in the Victorian capital to install a gender-neutral bathroom for trans and genderqueer students, following the growing trend to raise awareness around transgender issues at university. However, the bathroom debate has not always been full of positive experiences. In mid-2014, the Beat Mega Club, known as a queer-friendly nightclub in Fortitude Valley, was accused of discrimination and physical assault of an 18-year-old trans patron named McGregor, who said he was involved in an altercation with security after an incident regarding which gender toilets he could use. McGregor said to the local media, "I explained to them again that I am a trans man, but then they asked for my ID and security said that until my ID says that I am male, I cannot use the men's toilets." For some people, using toilets is a political issue. Sheila Jeffries, a feminist lesbian and professor in political science at the University of Melbourne, who was unavailable for comment, authored the paper The Politics of the Toilet, a feminist response to the campaign to degender a women's space. Jeffries not only finds the terms and conditions around transgender experiences and identities problematic, but asserts that people who transgender are still, through their lifetime experiences, the gender they were assigned at birth. Jeffries acknowledges that there is increasing literature and campaigning activism which seeks to degender public toilets, but she's critical and equates biologically determined women's only bathrooms with women's equality. I spoke to the Australian Human Rights Commissioner Tim Wilson about rights and equality when it comes to bathroom usage.
Of course, access to public facilities should be treated within the framework of human rights for everyone, including transgender Australians. But any policy change needs to be done, engagement in, with transgender Australians to understand what works in their best interests. The practical reality is that there are challenges that will be faced against the backdrop of how we've traditionally divided public bathrooms, and we need to make sure that all parties and all stakeholders are engaged in any process of reform.
And you've been listening to Joy 94.9 with A Little Pot of Joy with Alice and Andrea. And we've come to the end of another amazing program. Mm. And how's that 2 years on air?
I know. Yeah, big shout out to our friends in the show just before us every Monday night, Is Nothing Sacred. 2 years. That is just such an achievement. And they always have amazing content. They definitely haven't run out of topics.
I hope they don't run out of topics.
I'm sure they won't. We'll see them in another 2 years, no doubt.
You can find more of the complete podcasts on the Joy website, joy.org.au, or download them free from the iTunes store.
You've been listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program. See joy.org.au and click on our podcast link to subscribe to your favourite podcasts free.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.